You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Welcome to From the Black Hole, episode 48. On today's podcast, Emily Dulhanty joins Jeff and I to talk Women's World Cup, CONCACAF Champions League, Impact, TFC, Whitecaps, and we finish it all off with a little Voyageurs Cup action, Edmonton versus Ottawa. Okay, I've now hit record.
Fantastic.
And we're supposed to say stuff now.
Apparently, yeah. I don't know. This was a very little bit of an impromptu version of this.
Well, not exactly impromptu. We talked about it last week.
Well, you almost had a Fat Albert sound there, like, well, no. Exactly.
Awesome. Hey. Hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That was better than mine.
Yeah, that's right. You also have to try to do a Bill Cosby, like, Jell-O pudding.
No, I don't want it. All Bill Cosby jokes now lead to dangerous places. Like puns on pudding.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to go there. Anyway, there's this is a total aside. We haven't even started, so it can't be an aside. There's a thing that you have to check out called Bric-a-Brac Theater. Mm-hmm. If you go on YouTube and you type in Bric-a-Brac Theater,
okay,
some dude makes funny home videos with his knickknacks, and he tells stories with these knickknacks.
Okay.
But all the knickknacks, he does voices for them.
Oh, yeah.
But the voices are actually impressions of famous people,
right?
And he's really darn good.
Oh yeah!
And so he does this one where it's Christopher Walken. And John Madden are the first pilgrims coming over to America. And John Madden, apparently, in this is a psychopath. Because all he wants to do is kill everybody.
Yeah.
And he's doing this John Madden where he's saying, you know, we're going to go down and see a little deer over here. And I just want to burn this whole place to the ground. And Christopher Walken's trying to talk about him. He's like, no, John Madden. Don't be sad. Anyway, I can't do the voices, but he does Cosby.
Excellent.
And he does Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, he does Gottfried.
And he does George Bush.
Oh, he wants something. Have you ever seen The Aristocrats?
You mean the original movie, The Aristocrats?
No, it's
what are you talking about?
Kind of a documentary about this joke, which is in the comedian circle, called The Aristocrats.
Okay.
It's a joke that comedians tell comedians.
Okay.
And they've kind of all heard it. They all have their own versions of it, but they just try and one-up each other.
Can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
Emily Dulhanty just said, I'll be up for a bit, so just let me know.
Yeah.
Should we drag her in here?
Drag her in right now.
We're going to drag her in, and you know what? I'm not cutting this out. Even though this has been 3 minutes and 50 seconds of nonsense.
Yeah.
You're going to have to tell me the story afterwards, though, so just give me a second.
Yeah, well, I'll tell our beloved public.
Okay, go ahead.
I'll say, so the Aristocrats' basic idea is that you have to try and come up with a more extreme version of the same joke to try to make the other comedian laugh, but usually it goes down wretched, disgusting paths, you know. Anyway, if you get a chance, go on, it's probably on YouTube, go on YouTube and look up Gilbert Gottfried's version of The Aristocrats. Oh, it is.
I can imagine it's pretty nasty.
Him, okay. And the other good one is Bob Saget.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I hear Bob Saget's stuff is pretty nasty.
Oh, it's really, really. Sometimes he gets really dark. It's kind of like, whoa, Bob. You know, it's pretty, pretty funny, I think, anyway.
Okay. Well, okay. I'm really legitimately hitting pause now.
Okay.
And I'm going to Skype Emily in as soon as she's ready here, and then we're gonna restart this, and we're not gonna take out this 5 minutes of nonsense.
No.
Okay, Emily is here, as promised. Yeah, hi.
Hey. Sorry.
As promised about 45 seconds ago or so.
That's right, yeah. As promised right when you said as promised.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Because we run a tight ship like that here.
Okay, so Emily, I'm going to throw you... Yeah, exactly. It's very tight ship. Emily, I'm going to throw you a curveball right off the bat.
Sure.
What happened to your Women's World Cup specific podcast that you were talking about?
My Women's World Cup specific podcast?
Yeah, weren't you...
Well,
you were just kind of generally mentioning it sometime. Maybe it was on Twitter. I don't remember exactly, but I definitely remember.
What happened to your Dedicated to Me podcast you were going to do, Emily?
Oh, jeez.
I don't remember speaking about that.
I clearly remember that. In fact, I've been trying to send you messages about maybe pieces you could add to your shrine.
No. Jeez. It would be each podcast would be about 45 seconds of audio of somebody loudly vomiting. That's what it would be.
All right, I'm going to head right to Rob's question.
Yeah, that's probably best. That's probably best.
And then cover my second, I understand.
I might skip over it. I think I'll skip over it, Jeff. I actually was thinking about that recently, though, Rob. We'll see.
It was months ago, wasn't it? Or
I might do something. I was thinking about doing something maybe similar to the RNO guys, Ian and them, that do the East Side stand-up after the TFC games.
Yeah, like the post-game analysis kind of thing.
Yeah, we'll see. So
that would be very cool.
Yeah, we actually have a couple things like in the works in RNO as well before the World Cup. So yeah, some plans for some print stuff. So
you could always do a Habs podcast with your cousin Carolyn.
You're not cousin.
I was just texting her, actually. She's a little down.
You know what the Habs? Yeah. They're my team, too, and they're going out in four to Tampa.
Yep,
Tampa's the worst thing that could have happened to them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They need the Red Wings to win that series, and they didn't, so.
Okay, so why are we talking about this now? Did I lose the thread somewhere?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay, let's actually get back on topic, because now we're sitting at like 7.5 minutes of stuff that's not really on the topics that we are going to talk about. This is great. This is great. It's so much fun. The Women's World Cup roster was released. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised not... I mean, I get it. I get that most of those people were going to be on the team. Like, there wasn't much surprise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised they didn't get more play outside of the people that focus obsessively on Canadian soccer crowd in the media. You know what I mean? Like...
Mm-hmm.
People pumping up who these people are and stuff, because some of the, I mean, okay, Christine Sinclair might be a household name, but not a lot of the other ones are. And then you go a little deeper down the, you know, the pecking order in their roster. And there are a few that have kind of come in more recently, and then maybe a couple notable ones that were left off.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of that I want to ask and try and figure out what happened to her.
Yeah, so maybe...
Since we're off the top.
Oh, go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead. You're jumping...
I will forget. I'm sorry.
You're jumping in anyway, so I might as well just let you go.
I'm kind of... I'm chiming in, but not really chiming, rather banging the gong in.
Yeah, you're gonging in.
Gonging in. but what happened to Rachel Kwan?
Yeah, she's interesting...
like, everybody was all high on her, and she's just suddenly vanished.
Yeah, that was definitely... Like, I definitely like to ask John Herdman about her, kind of, not now, I don't know that he would answer questions about her now, but who knows, maybe after the World Cup or something, because, yeah, you guys remember before that game, almost 2 years ago now, actually, which is kind of crazy, time's flown by, but...
it has.
Yeah, she was like, that was the big news from that... that was the big news leading up to that game, really. Like, I remember being on that media call, and there were so many people on that call. I don't know that I've been on a busier call for the women's national team, and half the questions were about her, really, just asking kind of, you know, like, what her connection to Canada was and everything like that. And, yeah, it just seems weird that she never really did... Not that I think she didn't get a chance, because obviously she was in camps and we don't see practices and everything like that. But I mean, Yeah, she didn't really see a lot of game time for Canada at all, and it's definitely curious because she's been a steady steady defender for Chicago in the NWSL for the last 2 years now. So yeah, she's definitely an interesting case there, and yeah, just surprising. It's one of those ones that you kind of think back on and you kind of wonder, yeah, what happened? Because just looking at all the attention she had at the beginning, and now it's nothing, not a peep. Yeah.
So bizarre,
like,
eh?
Yeah, like, is she still playing for, you just said it. And it's
Chicago.
Like, Chicago, for Chicago Red Stars. She's still playing for them, right?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
There's not much more to say about that one, really.
I know,
but
it really is, yeah. Because I just remember that call so vividly, and yeah, all the questions were about her, really. So yeah, she really fell off the radar fast, definitely.
So a couple of people that are back on the radar, obviously, Sesselman and Matheson.
Yes.
Now, yeah, there was an interesting little blurb where, I don't remember who it was exactly, but somebody tweeted about hearing a rumor that Lauren Sesselman wasn't going to be able to make the comeback.
Mm-hmm.
And she immediately responded with, oh, well, that's news to me. And then she's like in almost like full team practicing within a week after that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a
Dwayne.
Yeah, it could have been.
It was Rollins, wasn't it?
Yeah, it could have been. Anyway, it made me laugh a little bit. But it's interesting that she's back. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that Matheson is on the roster. Does that mean they're both going to go? And actually, when I say, does that mean they're both going to go? It looks more likely that Sesselman's going to be able to go and going to be okay. So I guess I'm asking more about Matheson. What do you think is going to happen there? Is she out of the woods, or is this a tentative placement?
Yeah. I mean, I think, I know Neil Davidson, from the Canadian Press, he had a lot of good stuff coming out, the week kind of, leading up to the roster announcement. And, he was the one that first reported she was on crutches. Before, I think it was one of the TSN guys kind of reported that she actually had broken a bone. But I think before that, there was some quotes, and obviously, who knows if this was just Herdman, you know, kind of talking to the media and everything, and who knows if this was the truth, but they kind of made it sound like she was making really good progress with the ACL and ahead of schedule might have been mentioned. And this broken metatarsal really, really throws a wrench in it, obviously. It sounds to me kind of like a compensation thing, maybe, because I think it was left ACL, right foot. So maybe, I'm obviously not a medical professional, but could be that sort of thing. Or even just pushing, trying to get back in time. Definitely throws a wrench. You could tell even on the TV. I don't know if you guys actually were able to catch the, actual roster announcement, but she looked like she was kind of walking, you know, a little cautiously,
You're talking about Matheson.
Matheson, yeah. Sorry. It looked like she was walking a little bit cautiously. I think someone had reported she had been in a boot, like, recently as well.
Oh.
So, yeah, and then actually Har Johal from Vancouver, she had a good story on her, and it sounded like they were maybe kind of changing the narrative almost, saying that, you know, maybe she won't be ready for the group stage games, but we're going to get her ready, get Matheson ready for, you know, a knockout stage game. It sounds to me a little bit to me now that they're kind of maybe taking pressure off her now, obviously, to be ready for the group stage games, because, yeah, I think it's really unlikely she will be ready for that June 6th, because it was already going to be a huge challenge to be ready from the ACL in October. And, yeah, now the foot, so. Yeah,
and you know,
I don't mean to be the harbinger of doom, but I don't expect to see her in this Women's World Cup at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she sets foot on the pitch outside of, you know, running on after the final whistle of each game.
I agree with you. I agree with you definitely. I just think it was always going to be like tough. You see, sometimes ACLs, they come back maybe 10 months. and fully back maybe a year. So that was already going to be a huge thing to have her from October back in June. And
right.
Yeah.
But I will say that that place that they train there in Burnaby, they have some good tools there. I think they actually have an underwater treadmill, which is kind of a cool tool for kind of running, obviously at less kind of body weight.
Right.
So they have some tools there. So who knows? There's other ways to get foot fit besides running. So we'll see.
See, I wonder also, like, you can be fit, but you can't necessarily be match sharp. So having not really played in all these preseason friendlies and having had other people step in, and I mean, as much as you know, there's going to be a lot of weight maybe on the shoulders of somebody like Jessie Fleming. She doesn't seem to have done poorly with that, right?
Exactly.
She's risen to the challenge. I love the picture. There's a picture tweeted out right after. I think it was right after the roster announcement, and they had this picture of a bunch of the women, and then Jessie Fleming was over on the right side of the picture, and the look she was giving the camera looked like she was going to like jump through and like eat your heart. She was just like,
yes.
she seems like a very nice person. She just looked like evil. Her face just had this look of intensity. I was like, awesome. She's going to rip it up in this World Cup.
Yeah. You know what? Actually, I will throw out a mini prediction. It always terrifies me to do this, but what the hell, that Jessie Fleming is just going to have a standout World Cup. Like, she's going to be one of the players who people are going to remember from this one.
I hope you're right.
Yeah. What's the other thing somebody was saying, that she's only going to be going, she's in between grade 11 and grade 12 this summer?
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think that's accurate.
I think that's
it?
Right. It must be a surreal world to be in.
Yeah.
To be that age and being playing at this level.
She still plays for her local club in London, that Nor'easters soccer club or whatever in London.
Is that right?
Yeah.
She must be on serious hiatus from them, though, because you spent pretty much the entire last year in Vancouver.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I figure. But they always list her as still playing for that one youth club.
Oh, well, there you go.
Unless the TD from that club or the president just paid off the CSA to ensure that their club is forever mentioned beside her. She'll be playing for, like, Arsenal Women's or something, and they'll still say she's playing in London.
So
I guess it'll be true, but...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're different in London. Emily, any other surprises in terms of inclusions?
I could say probably, and most people would agree, maybe Selenia Iacocelli. She was definitely the one surprise. But after listening, I don't know if you guys regularly listen to that TSN FC with Jason, Luke, and Christian Jack.
Off and on.
Just Jason, obviously, his insight is second to none. And just listening kind of to his thoughts on, you know, even just, it's not always the best 23 that make it. It's you know, what 23 will work together best. And it sounds like there were some quotes that came out, even from, I think, Christine Sinclair, that said that Iacocelli is the one person on the team that really gets along with every single person on that squad.
I think I heard the same quote. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so even if... you know, even if she's not, who knows, right? It sounds like she also had a really great couple months since the Cyprus Cup, because I don't think she actually has played a game yet for Canada in 2015. You know, if she's there and she, you know, not keeps the peace, but, you know, keeps the team together, then it might be a surprise. But it's a good move, I think, definitely.
What about exclusions?
I was surprised. I think, I guess, you know, it's hard because if you're surprised about an exclusion, I guess you'd have to be surprised about an inclusion. But I guess I was a bit surprised about Janine Becky. I guess a couple people probably were as well. She maybe was one of the only ones, maybe Rebecca Quinn as well. Just a couple of those ones we saw at the Under 20 World Cup that I know those two were the ones they were still in camp, I think, in Vancouver. I don't think Sarayeka was actually, she hasn't been in Vancouver with the team. So
right.
I wasn't I wasn't very surprised about her not making it. But yeah, those two definitely. But I think we also have to remember that the Pan Am Games are the month after. So
right.
I think it would be much more. Obviously, I can't speak for them, but it might be a little inclusion, or sorry, a consolation that they have another major tournament. I mean, a month later, and I'm sure if these two are healthy and they want to be on the team, they'll be on that team. So it's not, you know, they'll have to wait another 4 years for a big tournament or anything. So,
well, yeah. I mean, considering, well, both Sura and Janine are, neither of them are over 20.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, they've probably got another 2 to 3 World Cups.
Oh, you mean,
yeah. Like full senior World Cups. Yeah. Yeah.
World Cups. Yeah.
Well, you see that, because then I think, like, well, Jesse Fleming probably could play at another one, at least another one under 20 World Cup. But,
yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Right. Yeah, they have World Cups on them, so, yeah.
Yeah, you broke up a little bit there. I hope people got that last little bit. Emily, you started to go all C-3PO on us.
Yeah.
Or R2-D2 is probably more accurate, but... Now one other thing I was going to ask you about, this has been on my mind for a while, and I'm not sure how closely you paid attention to this or not, but, and of course this is like the Saskatchewan person in me, you know, talking about Kaylin Kyle.
Sure.
Her role has completely changed, has it not? She seems to be, and this, like, maybe I got this totally wrong, but, she seems to have slotted more into the backup defensive midfielder role. Mm-hmm. Like, she's not going to start, and she's going to back up Desiree Scott.
Yeah.
Have you seen the same thing? And can you speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, I don't know if that's really a big surprise to me. I mean, I don't think she started, I'd have to go back and look, but I don't think she started many of the Olympic games, if any. I remember her coming on as a sub quite often. She played quite a bit, but I think most of it was coming on as a sub. I don't know if that I'm that surprised, or I see kind of a big change with her. She's definitely defensive-minded for sure, and she's good cover to come in, and like you said, backup Desiree Scott. Scott's definitely, I think, still one of the best in the world at her position. Yeah, Kaylin's still a good option off the bench for sure defensively.
I just think that the change has been because she would come in a more advanced role when she came off the bench. Yeah, well, I mean, just remember that she was the one that had to conspicuously dive out of the way of Matheson's goal, right?
I'm just going to put this out there, but that is the greatest contribution that Kaylin's ever made to the women's national team. Coming from a fellow Saskatoonian, as she is, I mean, I have other buds here who would agree that, and I will disagree with that one thing you said, where she's a good option to cover for Desiree off the bench. Man, I don't know. I'm never impressed when she's on the pitch. Never.
I could see her as a destroyer defensive, before I could see her as a good winger. That's the thing, right?
It's as a forward option. She's definitely a defensive option, I think. I don't know. If she could help out too much offensively. But I will say that when she played for Seattle, I don't know if you guys remember this, two summers ago now, I guess, the first NWSL season, when she was slotted in at center back, she was actually quite good in the air. Headers and stuff, corners, and if you guys remember as well, a couple years ago now, same year, I guess, 2013, she scored that goal in that friendly against France in the last second, and we tied them. And that was from the air, too.
Right. I mean,
we say maybe she's not a good offensive, you know, contributor, attacking contributor. But, I have seen her make some good plays in the air. And so that's, I don't know, maybe something we can keep in mind.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. No doubt. Maybe just one last question, then we'll move on to talk a little bit about the Impact, because we got to talk about them.
Everybody right now is wondering Everybody's wondering what the tone of voice you use.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just it didn't mean anything.
Rob's got some kind of bombshell to drop. Emily's for it, and now she's sweating. And he's
Emily's the only one that knows because her, you know, cousin's brother's former roommate is Joey Saputo's right hand man, and she's found out through the grapevine. We got a scoop.
Yeah.
No, we got nothing. We got nothing. That voice didn't mean anything. How do you feel going in to this? I mean, I think some people that have been following it closely have been riding a bit of a roller coaster of, you know, the group stage is going to be good, so we'll be all right. And then, no, we're going to lose our heads and get shellacked. And I don't know. What do you think?
I was just going to say same sort of thing, roller coaster. Like one week, I think we're okay. The next week, I think, oh, God. I don't know if we can score a goal against whatever, and oh, China looked good against these people, and you know, it's up and down, obviously, Canadian soccer, but yeah, I think we'll obviously get a good idea in a little bit, a couple weeks against England for sure. If we struggle against England at the end of May, then I think we'll see. We might struggle in the World Cup because I don't think England's really knocking on the door to do anything special at this World Cup. So they'll be a good kind of measuring stick here at the end of May. I was actually looking at the draw today, and I think if we come second in the group, we would potentially be matched up with whoever wins Group D, which is like the group of death.
Right.
The Americans and Sweden, so
I thought if we finished second we were almost guaranteed to get Germany. Didn't somebody show me
who's in that Group D besides the US?
That's the Sweden, US, Australia, Nigeria.
Oh right, yes, yeah. Yes. No, remember Jeff, you probably convinced yourself that we would get Germany based on your absolutely terrible analysis of what the bracket looked like.
because that's how FIFA put it on their website.
No, it is not. We had this discussion on the podcast. You can't read a computer screen. That's the problem.
Well, when it comes to my expectations of this World Cup, I'm in a glass case of emotion because the bad man, he punted Baxter. But really, I don't know if either of you got that reference, but that's...
No, I didn't. No. I was just going to let you keep going.
Neither of you? Oh, geez, that's brutal. Right now, all the listeners are kicking themselves laughing. But anyway, I don't think the England match is going to signify anything because this team can suddenly have John Herdman's psychoanalysis done on them and they suddenly turn into world beaters. You know, like
I hope you're right.
Literally, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure, like how Mr. Burns hired on that guy to do the hypnosis on the players. Like, you will give 110%. That is statistically impossible. The maximum anyone can give is 100%.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. Christine Sinclair has gigantism.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I still think quarterfinals is a pretty good realistic goal for this. And semifinals would be a good achievement, I think. That's my analysis there.
So much is going to depend on group stage. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really.
I'm just looking at the bracket here again. And, it's if we are runners-up in A and win the round of 16, quarterfinals could be potentially that winner of Group D, which would be like the U.S.-Sweden group. So, yeah, it definitely, like you said, Rob, it depends, obviously, like any tournament on the draw. So, hopefully we don't have that's the thing, too. I know you guys remember the under-20, how terrible of a start they had last summer, so it'll depend on how we start as well. So
had a hell of a finish though.
Yeah, they did.
Against Finland.
Oh man.
No pun there. All right, let's change topics to the men's side, and we're gonna talk kinda MLS but also CONCACAF Champions League. We gotta talk about this right off the top. It's still a good news story, isn't it? that the Impact made it to the final, even though they kind of collapsed in the second half of that game in front of 60,000 plus in Montreal. It is good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kinda.
Yeah.
I'm not like just putting on rose-colored glasses.
Let's look at it this way. They should probably not have gotten past Pachuca. They probably should not have gotten past Pachuca. So
a lot of people would argue that they shouldn't have gotten past FC Edmonton.
Yeah, actually, you know what? That's the beginning point. Yeah, that's who they shouldn't have gotten past was FCE. That's bang on. But you know, we all got spoiled. We all got spoiled by their fantastical run through the Champions League, and I think at that point everybody figured they were a team of destiny, right?
Oh, that narrative was certainly being spun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think? Do you have comments on those games, Emily? You guys are at least a little geographically closer to the action than we are, way out here in the frozen tundra.
Yeah, I found kind of, I guess not maybe like talk on the actual game, but just the whole debate about like if it was good for Canadian soccer and, you know, those debates and should we cheer for Montreal. I was actually talking to one of my uncles yesterday, and he is not a soccer guy at all. He's in the Toronto area, but he cheers for the Habs. Actually, we were just talking about the Habs. And he actually knew about the CONCACAF, like, Champions League Montreal's run in it. And I thought that was funny just because, yeah, not a soccer guy at all. And he said he even watched some of the games. So, you know, that was maybe a little bit of an insight into, you know, maybe a little bit of the reach, maybe with some people that you know, don't usually watch soccer, but, yeah, I think it was, you know, I saw Squiz tweet, obviously, you know, the Canadians didn't really have players on the field, didn't really have a big impact in the whole thing, but impact, but having,
yeah.
Having 60,000 Canadians watching a local club in a huge competition like this, that can't be bad for Canadian soccer, right? So, yeah, I'm a TFC fan, obviously, sadly. No, but I enjoyed watching their run. And, yeah, I think it was exciting. So, yeah, I think they collapsed a little at the end, but you could see it coming for sure.
Yeah, it's funny. I kind of pointed this out to some friends of mine who follow soccer but don't necessarily follow I don't know it quite as locally and the Canadian stuff as much as I do. And I said, you know, you guys really should be tuning into this. There's 61,000 in the Big O right now. And they tuned in and then they, you know, pretty much immediately saw the wheels fall off for Montreal. So it's really bad timing, but they were still, you know, suitably impressed that they made it there.
Yeah.
Cause they're a little bit more aware of MLS and they realize that Montreal has struggled in MLS for the last little bit. And more aware of MLS, not as aware of the CCL, but still know that 61,000 is a pretty impressive number to draw. So
yeah,
there's that side of it. I don't know. I that's a good news item as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, over capacity. I mean, they had to add those extra bleachers in again to do it, and they broke some record at least.
It's the largest attendance for a Canadian professional soccer game in the history of soccer in Canada.
Yeah, that's what
it's the biggest crowd. So that's darn impressive too. Yes. Now this makes what kind of makes me laugh is thinking back to Joey Saputo in February or whatever, whining about how many.
Yeah.
I don't know if you could say it's whining, but I kind of thought he was
my team.
Yeah, and yeah. Ticket sales aren't going well enough and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, they must have done all right in the last few games, right? They got some pretty decent crowds.
Yeah, and you know, the problem with that though is I still don't think he's whining that much. I think he's honest, you know, being kind of coming across kind of honest. And I think that comment was aimed more at the Montreal media.
Right.
Being so tunnel visioned on the Habs only, really, in the sense that, you know, the regulars jumped on the bandwagon for these games because they were huge events, right? Like they were a hey, were you at that game event,
right?
Whereas, you know, people still aren't showing up to their league games enough.
Well, they haven't hardly had any league games to know whether or not this is going to translate into anything else, really.
Well, it's going to be coming up here right away because their first home game at that's Poodle is going to be next weekend.
Against TFC, right?
Against Philly.
Oh, sorry. I thought their V's Cup games were going to be
coming up right away. I'm not counting that as league because you never
right, of course.
You just never get the crowds for the, unfortunately, for the Voyagers Cup games. But
right.
Especially if the Habs are still playing.
Yeah. Although, speaking of the Habs, there are several instances where the Impact supplanted the Habs on the front page of sports sections.
Yes.
During that run, which is pretty darn impressive in Montreal, right?
Yeah.
It's a shame that it takes such a monstrous event and such a fantastical run for them to finally crack the Habs bubble.
Well, you know, if they did it once or twice every couple of years, I think that they'd be happy with that as long as they're still getting their numbers.
Yeah.
Like, do you have to be the top sport in town, or can you just do really well as the second or third or fourth sport in town?
Well, the problem
I think you could be okay being the second or third or fourth sport in town.
Montreal is the exact same as Edmonton. You know, the Oilers in Edmonton absolutely commandeer everything. You never hear anything else in Edmonton really outside of the Oilers. Even the Eskimos struggle to a degree when it comes to publicity because the Oilers are dominant so much. And same thing, though, the Alouettes don't quite get enough because the Habs are so incredibly dominant. So I just personally am hoping to still see hockey culture take a little bit of a shrink a little bit. And other sports
take
culture.
A little bit of a shrink. I was like, where are you going with this?
Where was I going with that? I had a pathway in mind, and it kind of dead ended all of a sudden. I'm like, oh.
Okay, two things that I'm not, Emily, I'm not sure if you know this, but then I'm going to use this as a bit of a segue into you being able to talk about TFC. Number one, Lars, our third the third of the silly triumvirate on this podcast, started his kind of supporter journey going to watch the Impact in their last CONCACAF Champions League run. I think it was quarterfinals when they were at the Big O and they got a huge crowd. And it was one of the first soccer games that he'd gone to. I think he was University of Ottawa at the time. And, you know, then he became a supporter kind of thing. Secondly, I'm not sure if you heard our MLS predictions. Let's examine some of those, not that directly, but through what's been happening with, not the Impact, because they haven't played an MLS game in forever, but with TFC and Vancouver. TFC had a good result in Philly, and obviously being a TFC supporter, you're in touch with what's going on there. I think if I remember right, Lars and Jeff were more convinced that TFC was going to do well. I still wasn't 100% convinced. I don't know that I am still. I just feel like there's some magic wand, not benevolent magic wand, that's going to come and tap some of these guys. Like Giovinco is going to get hurt, or you know, Jozy Altidore is going to have a falling out with Michael Bradley, and they're going to punch each other. They're going to punch each other out on the practice field, or some.
I really want this to happen.
Some bizarre thing is going to happen, and the wheels are going to fall off the bus. But they seem to be over the last couple of weeks have been riding the ship a little bit. So, what do you think about the performance in the last couple of weeks in these away games that they've had?
Well, as for the punching prediction, I really would not be surprised about anything ever that happens at TFC. So who knows? Might happen. But yeah, I thought, I think what do they have now? 9 points from seven
yeah.
away games?
9 points from seven.
Which is not bad. I think we would have taken that going in. Obviously, there were some more points we could have picked up along the way, for sure. And you can say that, obviously, about any stretch. But, yeah, I'm still unconvinced defensively. I think yesterday, or what day? Yeah, Sunday. Yesterday, Philadelphia could have had a goal, for sure. I think they hit the crossbar in the first half. And Konopka was a little nervy in the air. I guess that might have been just from not playing in MLS for so long because Bendik was out.
Yeah.
But yeah, a little bit unconvinced, but yeah, Jovinko staying healthy will definitely be the key, like you said. And yeah, it's kind of interesting now. I was thinking about this after they had that whole thing about Michael Bradley taking the captaincy off of Stephen Caldwell, and I was even on that ship of thinking, okay, well, they should have kept it with Caldwell, right? He's been a good captain for however long he was at the club. I guess, what was it, a year and a half, I think he had it for? Or,
something like that.
Something like that. But yeah. Now looking back, you know, he's been so injured, so I don't mind that move at all. It would have been Bradley taking the captaincy anyway. And I know a lot of people don't put too much stock in that, but I was just thinking about that recently, and there was a little bit of an uproar, and now it's kind of funny that Caldwell has been so injured. But, yeah, we'll see. I think they said that they were off looking at players in Italy, so, yeah, we'll see. Still early.
But, that sounds like I don't know.
It's like
players in Italy.
Sigh, like we know something's coming.
Wait.
You want to know what's coming is Caldwell's definitely out. Definitely out. There's no question the second that they made the move to take the captaincy away from Steven, he's gone. As of the midsummer transfer window, they're definitely bringing somebody in from Italy because of Giovinco's connections. Mm-hmm. I'll put money behind that prediction.
Oh, hardcore destroying center back. Hey?
Yep. You're looking at your
sorry, you go.
I was going to say, you're looking at your Alessandro Nesta version 2, basically. You're looking at Nesta version 2 is going to be coming to TFC. Like, they're building this club to win MLS Cup this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, I was going to say Caldwell's injury seem, I think his latest one was Achilles, I think they said, and that's kind of a thing that can linger for a while, kind of a recurring thing in my running experience, I guess.
Right.
So it's not, you know, something that can heal fully, I think, sometimes. It's something that might always be there. So, yeah, definitely uncertainty around that. But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised with what Jeff says if they get someone totally new in there because he can't stay healthy.
What do you think about Ashton Morgan's resurgence? Hallelujah. He's not glued to the bench all season. He's been putting in some good minutes. And actually, their last few defensive performances have been much better. And people have been saying, hey, he's kind of a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been fun definitely to watch him. It was funny in the game yesterday. There was one point where the commentators said, like, they just were talking about him at the beginning and praising him, and then I think he let one of the Union wingers, like, come inside, and he almost slipped, and I was like, oh, God, it's the commentator's curse. Like, they're going to score right off this, right, when they were praising him. But, he recovered there. But, yeah, it's definitely been fun to watch him, his resurgence, and hopefully he can keep it up because, it's nice to have someone like that you can root for sure.
Well, My thoughts are on when it comes to Morgan's sort of quote unquote resurgence is, you know, how could things have gotten any worse for him when he just had nobody in the back line at the end of the season, even at the midpoint of last season, there was nobody else in the back line that you know could marshal it. I mean, you know, now they have Perkis back there. Suddenly, Nick Haglund is playing in his natural center back position and is playing well. Mm-hmm. And Morrow has been playing well on the right. Suddenly, Ashton Morgan doesn't have to be doing, you know, two guys' jobs along with his own.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're able to actually start concentrating on their own defensive duties and not on each other's. And the other big thing, you mentioned that Giovinco... You mentioned that Giovinco has been a key player, and I'll spell out exactly why he is the key player, not because he's scoring goals, because Jozy Altidore is the one who's been scoring the majority of goals so far, outside of Gio's two against who the heck was that, where they still lost 3-2. Was that Columbus?
Who
the heck was that against? They were already out of it. It was 3-0. And was it Dallas? Was it FC Dallas?
Oh, yeah, the one where Dallas, they had the rain.
Yeah, the rain out. That
yeah,
was Dallas.
I think that was
yeah.
Dallas, yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, they Giovinco is the key player because he's absolutely terrifying to the opposition's midfield and D. Just absolutely terrifying to them because he has such quality. I mean, that guy should still be starting for Juve. Like, let's not beat around the bush on this one. He should still be starting for Juve, and he got frozen out of the squad, and I think that's why he was such a beautiful transfer target that Bezbachenko fell on. But because he's so terrifying, they are spending more time worrying about him, which is giving Jozy Altidore the ability to be able to take guys on one-on-one and challenge for the ball, for 50-50 balls one-on-one, and he's bigger than the other guy, so he's going to win more of those. Therefore, TFC suddenly has the ability to hold the ball up at the front. Plus, now Ashton Morgan isn't under constant threat from the other team attacking wave after wave after wave. He has the ability to get a breather in and actually start playing offensively. Like, his offensive play is fantastic. He's probably the best crosser of the ball on the team. You know?
It's funny that you say that because that was one of the knocks against him 2 seasons ago, is that a lot of his crosses, you know, went begging. They were too deep or they were whatever, right? And yep, he has put in some nice crosses. It's yep, been a notable change. So I'm not sure what the reason for the change is there, but it's a good one.
Yeah. They also have, I mean, Jozy is like the big target man now.
Right.
So he can definitely get on a lot of those crosses too, maybe more than some of the others have been able to.
Yeah, and then you have Benoit Cheru, mm-hmm, which still boggles my mind that they actually managed to buy that guy. Like, yeah, he is, his quality and his ability to calm down the play and completely bring things from a 9 down to a 3 when he gets on the ball is just uncanny. Like, mm-hmm, like they'll be like, the other team will be attacking. There'll be maybe one or two waves in a row, and then the ball will make its way to Cheru, and he will he'll look back. TFC of old would have seen a player just wail the ball up the field and lose possession, or out of touch and lose possession. But he gets possession and he holds it, and he finds that outlet pass, and it is unreal how terrible Philly looked when Cheru would get on the ball and find that outlet pass to take the pressure off and give TFC a counterattacking chance. Like, just night and day. Like, this team is completely night or completely day compared to the night team that they've been since 07. It's just incredible.
You know, Jeff, with all that, sorry, go ahead, Emily.
I was just going to say, I think it might be, you also have to keep in perspective who they've beaten these last couple weeks, right? So I don't know if I would say, I guess night and day, you said since 2007, but yeah, we got to keep it a little in perspective for sure. Keep it in.
No way, man. Plan the parade route.
Okay, so speaking of that perspective, last year with TFC, the narrative was the games in hand narrative. Okay, well, we're still, you know, we're pretty close to a playoff spot, and we've got all these games in hand. Wait till we win a bunch of these at home, and then they never did, right? And then July and August were terrible, and July and August were when they were playing more games, and they were supposed to pick up all these points. This year, the narrative is we've spent all this time on the road. Now we're playing an overwhelming percentage or a large percentage of our games at home. We've got all these home games to go through. We're going to be much better at home, yada, yada. Do you want Kara to give a bit of a prediction as to whether that narrative is actually going to come true, unlike the one from last year? That's you, Emily. I'm throwing that at you.
I think so. I think it'll help for sure. Obviously, it's not. I mean, I agree with the games in hand thing. I think a lot of people talked about that as if it was kind of, okay, games in hand, like that's a 3 points there, kind of, you know, adding it up before we even played kind of thing. But yeah, I think playing at home definitely, for a lot of reasons will be definitely good, but, yeah, it's not a for sure thing. Sometimes like the games in hand sort of thing. Yeah. Like last year.
Right.
Who is TFC's opponent in the first home game in 2 weeks?
It's next week.
Is it next weekend?
Yeah. Yeah. Mother's Day. Weekend. Yeah. I think it's Houston.
It's Houston?
I think so.
That's probably a good thing because Houston is struggling. Mm-hmm. They need a weak opponent that they can beat the piss out of at home. And no, really, they need a weaker opponent that they can beat the piss out of at home to give them that now we're home, we can win here mentality, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
They need to get that monkey off their back because they have a lot of pressure coming into that game. If they get that monkey off their back, boy, they're going to be a really tough team to beat at BMO. And that's incredibly absurd that I'm saying this.
You know, Jeff, I was going to say, you almost have some enthusiasm in your voice. Like a little bit of emotion. I think you're starting to switch allegiance.
Yeah, you're
not switch allegiance, but it's nice to actually see all three. Well, it's nice to actually see all three of the Canadian teams doing good things in MLS finally, right? Like, we had years where it was Vancouver, Montreal. We had years where it was Montreal.
Nobody.
Yeah, we had years where it was nobody.
More often nobody. Or kind of somebody, maybe, if you spin it just right.
Yeah. But now, all of a sudden, this year, that kind of brings me back to Montreal for a quick second. I think, you know, Montreal's only played four games so far in the season. Everybody's saying, oh, look at Montreal, 2 points, you know. 2 points are at the bottom of the table. Yeah, well, they have 2 points out of 4 games. They've played a couple of those away, and then they had some disappointing results at home. But still, Montreal's a team that has players, guys like Piatti and
Romero.
Romero is another one, and even a guy like Cabrera in the back, who I think will help them climb their way up the table. There are some absolute garbage teams in the East. Like Philly guaranteed finishes bottom of the East. Without question, Philly is a basement of the entire league. So, I don't know.
Silence.
I didn't mean to just stop there.
You've baffled us.
I was waiting for somebody to be like, oh yeah.
We know better than to just, flat out agree with you, Jeff.
You guys are scared to agree with me. That's
We should, and with good reason. Well, let's turn our attention very quickly to the Caps. I think we were pretty reluctant about what they were going to do this year. In fact, we kind of didn't see where the offense was going to come from. Is that a fair characterization, Jeff? You must remember this discussion.
No, I remember exactly what I said when we did the prediction pod. And I said that I expect the Whitecaps are probably going to finish down near outside of the playoff spots in the West, unless this Rivero guy, who I'll now say Octavio Rivero, the phenom, turns out to be just that, a phenom. And holy crap, that guy is tearing up the West. Like, I haven't seen a striker just absolutely terrorize back lines in MLS like him. Josie and Giovinco are good, but Octavio Rivero to me right now is leading candidate for the MLS MVP.
I'm not sure that he terrorized Portland's defense all that much in that last game.
He had moments.
He had moments, but He sure had some great games, so I'll give him that.
Oh yeah,
leading up to that one
at home, he is a one man wrecking crew at BC Place. Just incredible.
So before the season, Emily, what were you thinking in terms of the Caps? Or were you thinking about the Caps at all?
She was thinking in all caps.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Waka, waka,
just like
waka.
Just like Don Cherry speaks in all caps.
That's right.
Yeah, I think, you know, same probably as a lot of people. I thought they had a fairly good season last year, and it seems like they made some good moves in the off season. So, yeah, just kind of cautiously thought they would improve, definitely, and they've shown it for sure so far.
Well, you were way ahead than the rest of us then, because we weren't seeing it.
Jeff was real negative on the Caps.
Yeah,
And that's his team. So maybe he was just saving himself from future possible disappointment.
Potential.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know what? If they keep up this points per game, they'll be top three in the West for sure. Right?
Yeah, they'll be challenging. They'll be challenging for the Supporters' Shield.
Yeah, for sure they will. Like, I mean, they've had some late game heroics, some crazy goals, mm-hmm. but I'm surprised at how tight they've been at the back. Yeah. They just have not leaked a lot of senseless goals. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty impressive, I would say.
I don't think they're going to win the Supporters' Shield. I see New England winning the Supporters' Shield, but yeah, I see New England being first in the league overall, and then either the Whitecaps or TFC being second in the league overall. It's going to be a really crazy, and then Montreal's going to take fifth or sixth in the East and make the playoffs. I see all three Canadian teams making the playoffs now. It's crazy.
Oh boy, that's a bold prediction.
So weird,
right?
Six teams making the playoffs though.
Out of 10.
It's funny to get used to. Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah.
They sold out this season. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. MLS sold out.
But there's the play-in games, right? There's four of those six teams have to go through play-in games.
Ah.
That will be very fast, and mm-hmm. it'll be over very fast, true. And we'll have forgotten about two of those teams in the East and two of those teams in the West almost immediately. So, you know, despite the fact that it increases the number of potential, you know, poor teams squeaking into the playoffs, those poor teams, I think, are going to get found out right away.
Yeah, potentially. So, you never know.
I don't know. You know what? We should let Emily go since we dragged her on here so quickly. And Jeff and I have one more very quick thing to talk about. Oh. But with the Voyageurs Cup, because he was in Edmonton and I wasn't. I was working for a living and he got to go to the game. That's right. That's what he does.
I was riding the dole all the way to Edmonton.
Riding the dole.
Yeah.
There's a mixed metaphor for you. Holy crap. You're skating out on a limb saying that.
Yeah.
Never mind. This humor is wasted on you, Jeff. Okay, anyway, we'll let Emily go. Thanks for coming on such short notice.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
And it's always good to have you on.
Yeah.
And if we don't talk to you beforehand, we'll see you in Edmonton.
Yeah, I'll see you there. Cool.
All right, cheers.
See you, Emily.
Bye.
Okay, last section. Holy smokes, we're pushing an hour worth of time. Maybe I should go back and cut out all that nonsense, that 5 minutes of nonsense at the start.
We can release that as its own little teaser or something. Or
Maybe I'll leave it in. Tag with it. Okay, I want to ask you about your trip to Edmonton.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff, how was your trip to Edmonton?
Yeah, there were some shenanigans and not cool shenanigans on the drive there, but we'll just leave it at that.
Oh, hey, okay. Let's frame this a little bit before we just. I don't have that much to say. I only got to watch a bit of the streams off and on. Like I, you know, and then there were some technical issues with one of them. I don't remember which one. But we're talking about Voyageurs Cup.
Yes,
Edmonton defeated Ottawa over two legs, and I have to say looked much better doing so.
Yeah.
The Ottawa collapse was nightmarish. They just lost their legs and disappeared.
Yeah. And there are some real bad apples I've heard on that Ottawa squad. Like there are some egos in the Ottawa locker room that are clashing with each other, and Mark Dos Santos.
Yes.
Mark Dos Santos, man, he's
got his hands full.
Yeah. Like boy, I don't even know how you measure success in NASL unless you make one of those top four spots and make the playoffs. I guess that's really the only way.
Right.
But,
they got a hill to climb then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, like they were just completely – I watched their game. I watched Ottawa's game against the Cosmos yesterday. And
it sounded like it was an all right game.
They got handled, man. It should have been
– it was only 1-0 though.
Yeah, but it should have been a landslide.
Mm.
Should have been an absolute landslide. Tommy Heinemann is a freak show and nothing more. I think he's an appalling striker. I thought he was an appalling striker when he was with the Whitecaps, and I still think he's an appalling striker. I can't believe that he's managed to stay on, and they have faith in him in Ottawa. I just don't think he brings anything to the table. And then you have like the best guy. The best guy, actually, to tell you the truth, the best guy on the pitch in the two Voyagers Cup matches was Paulo Jr. for Ottawa.
Hmm.
If Edmonton could get their hands on Paulo Jr. and have him creating for Niasse and Lang on the wings, plus for Tomiyama Iobe up top, wow. Suddenly Edmonton becomes one of the best, becomes equal to New York. Because, man, that Paulo Jr. guy is fantastic. Wow, is he good.
Fordyce is no slouch, though.
Fordyce is all right. I don't know. Paulo Jr. is just head and tails better than everybody else on the pitch, when no matter what team they're playing, it seems.
So talk a little bit about the game day experience,
sure,
which has undergone quite a significant and positive change, at least from a supporter's perspective for FC Edmonton.
Yeah, for Edmonton. So there's a club, a soccer club in Edmonton called the, and here's their shout out that I promised them, called Morningwood Rovers, Twitter handle at MW Rovers FC. Anyway, there are a whole pile of British expats that are living in Edmonton who play for this soccer club in the city. And the one guy, Danny Greenwood, is sort of the head of that club, and he's also organizing to bring all these guys out to FC Edmonton matches. I don't know if people notice, but Section 107
It's pretty full.
It was almost filled from top to bottom, is how big that was, and how much of a difference they're making. Like, ESG has shrunk a little bit over the last 2 years, and then all of a sudden, Danny's been bringing out all these guys from Morningwood, and which is an awesome name, which we already discussed.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah. And he's bringing all these guys out, and they're filling the stand. They're making it a great atmosphere. I don't know. It was just a real breath of fresh air. There were already a couple of Brits that would come stand in 107 because they wanted to be in a standing supporter section,
right?
And they're not affiliated with Morningwood, but they were right in. Like, it went from 107 being yet another area where all the chants were kind of canned, like they're pre-thought, and they were just, let's go from this one, and then, okay, let's do this one now, okay, let's do this one. They weren't related to the game day action. They were just kind of happening because those were songs. Whereas now the Morningwood guys have brought that sort of English or British supporter culture where things are really done off the cuff, kind of on a whim, and that's nice. Like, that's something that I don't like about North American soccer supporter culture. It seems everything is too pre-thought out, too pre-planned, doesn't have enough relation to what's actually happening in the match. And whereas, you know, you get your British supporter culture, which is much more related to what's happening in the match, what the other supporters group is saying, everything, you know?
Maybe you need to, I don't know, solidify things or feel more comfortable before you can be spontaneous. Maybe that's the issue. Yeah, I don't know.
It could be, but I know, I think there's,
I'm glad to hear it though, that there's some spontaneity there.
Yeah. I think you'd really enjoy yourself in this section because it's hilarious usually too. Like, whatever's being sung is appropriate for the moment, and it's hilarious. It always makes light of the moment, right?
Right.
So, it's brilliant. But I don't think feeling comfortable with supporter section is what it is. I think there's this overriding thought that, you know, you have to be singing every single second of every single game, and the only way to really do that is to make sure that there are songs that can be forced over the entire section all the time. And I don't think that's really the best way to go personally, but that's just me.
Yeah. No, I kind of agree with you that I would like to see a little more spontaneity too, but then again, I'm not there all the time. I'm here in Regina. So
yeah.
That doesn't mean that at the Canada games though, that, you know, when we go watch the Women's World Cup coming up, that it can't be like that. Do you think Edmonton's going to do some damage in the rest of the Voyagers Cup?
Sadly, no. Sadly, I think they're going to come up against a Whitecaps squad who has all these guys. Like, seriously, the Caps are deep this year. Like, they have a deep squad.
Mm-hmm, they do.
Look at their roster. man, they can pull guys off their roster to play out there. You know, Edmonton's best hope is that Carl completely sloughs off the Voyageurs Cup and plays, and this is going to piss some people off, but plays a bunch of the Canadian kids who they signed to the roster to make sure they hit, they kind of appease all the hardcore supporters who are calling for it, and that guys like Lance Lang and Tommy Amiobi and Sani Niasse eat them alive, and you know that's their best hope. If they play anything close to a starting 11, they will wipe the floor with FCE. They will wipe the floor with them, and that's not saying that FCE is a bad team. I'm just saying that the Caps are a top four club in all of MLS this season, in my opinion, looking at them right now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they play that. I mean, they played a lot of the more younger players, younger Canadian players in the Voyageurs Cup last season, the Caps did.
Yeah.
But they did pretty well, those younger players.
Yeah.
They didn't look out of place. But then again, they were against last year's TFC, not this year's FC Edmonton. So
yeah, exactly. And, you know, I foresee a Whitecaps TFC final. And I foresee TFC winning it.
Well, there, that's interesting.
Yeah. I just don't see the Caps lifting the Voyageurs Cup yet. I don't see it yet. You know, I know I think it's almost in their best interest that they don't, cause then they don't have to worry about the Champions League next year. Even though they have to worry about it this year, they're going to find out real quick, I think, this year, how much of a strain playing in the Champions League actually puts on your squad. And I know they're a deep team, but man, look what happened to teams like New York playing in the Champions League. I would argue, you know, they had those big tough games against Montreal, who was playing their starting 11, forced New York to play basically the starting 11, and yeah, like New York just faltered.
Mm-hmm. Down the ran out of gas.
Yeah, they just started running out of gas.
Well, there certainly is the whole fixture congestion thing. That's a problem.
Yeah.
With the competition, unfortunately. I mean, it's
unfortunate
to say, but it's a reality.
Yeah, it is.
I think.
I still love the Champions League. I still love the Voyageurs. Voyageurs Cup is my absolute favorite competition of all soccer competitions on earth. It is what I look forward to every single year. And I mean, going to the match, and I mean, watching Edmonton bang in the first two within, what was it? It was 2-0 in the first 11 minutes, I think.
Yeah, it was fast.
It was real
fast.
Quick. Like Ottawa looked like they came off the bus 5 minutes before that game kicked off.
Right.
Like they looked like they just got shell shocked. And somebody was mentioning to me, and I think it was actually Nathan Chileski, because after I won CSA Fan of the Match.
You had to drop that in there, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, indeed, yes. After winning CSA Fan of the Match, I hung out first with Tom Pfaff in the VIP tents they have on the opposite side from the new stands.
Right.
And then Nathan Chileski happens to stand over there now instead of in the bleachers right by 107.
Okay.
Him and Toby, I think, were over there for a little bit. But talking with Nathan, he mentioned that the big change to FC Edmonton this year, and we're going to break into NASL at this point, because what more can you really say about a 6-2 aggregate win by Edmonton over Ottawa than that Ottawa is looking like complete shite? And that's the bottom line right now. But Edmonton's got this three-pronged attack, Nathan pointed out. And after he mentioned it, I thought to myself, I'm like, yep, you know what? That's why this is happening. They switched out Frank Yonke because he's not a speedster. And now they have Lance Lang on the left, Sani Niasse out on the right, and Tommy Amiobi up top with pace. They have this crazy, crazy pace on both sides to spread the opposition's defense quite wide. And then they have Tommy Amiobi up top, who is a tall speedster, and he's a double threat. And I'm trying to think who the heck they partner with him up top. It's him and,
Do they partner anybody?
Sadi Jalali.
Oh, right, Jalali.
Yeah, Jalali's been up there, and Jalali's been an unfortunate flop so far. But those three are able to just ravage opposition defenses. I mean, they made Ottawa's D look pitiful. Like, that's when Lance Lang came on in the first half of the first leg, or excuse me, when he came on in the second half of the first leg, he just absolutely destroyed Ottawa's right midfield and right defense, right outside back. It was just incredible how that game just completely turned on its head. And I think they're going to do that in the league this year as well. I think Edmonton's going to be probably third or fourth overall in the NASL. Ottawa is fortunate that Jacksonville came into the league. Is it Fort Lauderdale or San Antonio? Might be San Antonio is such a bottom feeder. And heck, even teams like Minnesota aren't looking quite as strong. Ottawa's fortunate. They're going to finish, I don't know, maybe sixth or seventh in the league. They're not going to make playoffs, but Edmonton will. My prediction is that Edmonton makes the playoffs.
Well, I hope you're right because, you know, prairies, right?
Yeah, sure. And we should hint that there might be a very interesting interview coming up.
Yeah, well, we'll just say that there might be a very interesting interview coming up, because if we say too much and it doesn't go off, then we look like fools.
That's right. We look like robs, and that's that we don't.
Hey.
I should have said Lurzes, because he's not here to defend himself.
Yeah, there you go. I want to say one last thing, and then we've been on this for like an hour and 10 minutes, so this is really stinking long.
Yeah.
But a little shout out to both the more established Ottawa podcast. Ours is The Fury, of course.
Yeah.
With guys that we know. Yeah. And also with the new and doing very well Loyal Company, the River Valley podcast for FC Edmonton. So happy that FC Edmonton has their own podcast this year.
Yes.
And that those guys are heading it up, because they're doing a great job. It's fun to listen to. Yep. I haven't listened to every episode, I got to admit. I've caught, I think, two or three. Because I haven't been on the road enough. And that's when I do my podcast listening, is when I have long drives. But yeah, they're doing great. They've started really well. So that's always good to see.
Yeah, it is.
And that brings us to the end of episode 48. Thanks again to Emily Dulhanty for joining us. Always love it when she's on the podcast. We'll be back again with another episode. So until then, take care.